Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Dr. Meg Meeker. She's a physician. She's also the author of the bestseller Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And today, I'm talking with her about her latest book called Raising a Strong Daughter in a Toxic Culture, 11 Steps to Keep Her Happy, Healthy, and Safe. Dr. Meeker, welcome to Life Quest.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Why this book at this time?
It's a great question. Because I've been at this about 30 years, and over the past 6 or 7 years, I've noticed a lot of parents are writing me with this anxiety in their voice. I can feel it as they write. And they're very afraid of a lot of things going on in our culture. Social media, you know, what do they say to their kids about the transgender thing? We've got third graders dieting. You know, we're living in a hyper-sexualized culture. And parents are feeling overwhelmed. And they come in and they're asking questions, should I let my daughter see this movie or not? What age do I give her a cell phone? And I said, you know, I need to talk to the parents, A, to answer questions and tell them how to help their daughters, but also to encourage them that no matter what comes at our daughters, they're stronger. They have a much bigger influence in their daughters' lives than all the stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
So take heart, get a backbone of steel, and you can bring your daughter out on the other side and have her be very healthy and strong.
You know, very early in your book, you say that psychologists have long known that girls' friendships are very different from boys' friendships. Would you talk to me about that?
Sure. You know, there are a lot of dynamics in a girl friendship. Girls, first of all, bond with one another by talking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, back and forth, back and forth. Boys, in general, tend to bond by just doing stuff together. They don't need to talk a whole lot. They just need to throw each other down on the floor and wrestle and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They need to build things and smash them. But girls, and so in that the context of those conversations, a lot of things come up. And the conversations aren't just face-to-face. They're through social media.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say things to one another that are positive, but they say a lot of negative things to one another.
Yeah.
And there's so much girl drama from probably even before sixth grade on, that parents, you know, I hear about all the time. So-and-so is a bully in the class, and she's pulling my daughter's best friend away from me. What do I do? So really to help parents sort of say, okay, here's how you can help your daughters establish healthy friendships.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, she doesn't need 10 friends, which means she doesn't need to fold into a big peer group. She needs one or two good friends, that's it. So don't worry that she's not being accepted by all of these kids. You know, girls do much better with one or two close friends rather than a whole pack of friends. So, you know, it's really hard, particularly for mothers who see girls who are rude to each other,
mm-hmm.
who are fighting. Girls are incredibly fickle. You know, one day they'll have this as a best friend, and
right.
a month later it'll be somebody else's best friend. So really talk to parents about how do you keep your girl kind of steady through that.
You know, you mentioned being a good mother is the most humbling experience, and then you say it begins by looking back at your own childhood and separating the good from bad. Sometimes it was bad for many mothers as they're looking back.
Yeah, yeah. I talk to parents often about their parenting preload, and that is all the stuff that we come into our parenting with. And I find that mothers parenting daughters is often more challenging than dads parenting daughters because it's the female-female thing. Mothers can drive their daughters kind of hard, but If a mother had a bad relationship with her mother,
mm-hmm.
or she had a lot of pain in her childhood, or she had a lot of good things, that's going to directly affect how she parents her daughter. So unless we look back into our childhood and go, what did I like and what did I not like, you know, and we can change bad behaviors or we can resolve things. If we don't do that, we're going to repeat all of that subconsciously. We're going to repeat all of that. And that's why people say, you know, have you ever spoken and heard your mother in your voice? Well, we all have. Yeah. Because mom comes with us as we parent our daughters.
It was hard for my wife to deal with the fact that many times, in fact, even to this day, daughters want to talk to dad. And I would drive them home from school many times, and they'd unload everything. And then when mom would say, how's your day? And she'd say, well, it was okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you why that is. Because I'm a mom, and I did this all the time. And my daughters often want to talk to their dad. First of all, since men don't use as many words during the day, they tend to be a little bit better listening because they don't have to talk. They'll ask a question, listen. Mothers also do something because we have an agenda. We want our daughters to believe what we believe and to get the point we're trying to make. So we'll ask a question. The daughter will be a sentence or two into answering her question. But we, as the mom, are formulating how we're going to correct her answer. And so we interrupt and we answer it before she's even done answering it. Because that's kind of how the mother-daughter dynamic is. I did this all the time with my daughters, and then I had to catch myself and say no, because often we ask questions not because we really want to hear the answer, but because we want to come in and correct the answer.
Told we're supposed to communicate with our kids and let you know what's going on in their lives. And I remember I was always hearing teenagers think you're interrogating them when you ask them too many questions.
Yeah.
I did have some parenting person say to me once, Dwight, don't start asking questions. Just tell them what you've done this day, and pretty soon it'll come out. And it did.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the mistakes that we parents make is we ask questions at the wrong time. For instance, when your child gets in the car, don't talk to them because they're miserable. You know, it's like when you come home from work and somebody runs up to you and starts asking you a million questions. It's like, wait, my brain's full right now, okay? Give me half hour. And so we tend to ask our kids questions at the wrong times. So what I encourage parents to do, a great time to talk to your kids is maybe when they're alone in their room, they're getting ready for bed. You know, you peek your head around the door and say, hey, you know, how are you getting ready for bed? And just, you know, sit in a chair in their room, sit on the edge of the bed and just say, hey, how was your day today? And if they feel like talking, they'll open up. And if they don't, you come back the next night or you come back a couple nights later. So gently move in there. But, you know, teenagers get a bad rap. They do want to talk. They don't want to talk if, A, they feel they're going to be interrupted and corrected and lectured. And, B, they won't want to talk if they really believe nobody's going to pay attention. So if you let them know you really want to hear what they have to say and you're not going to interrupt them or correct them, that's all they need. And just be very sensitive to when you ask a question. And if you have a real troubled relationship with your child, it may take a month or two or three. Keep pursuing them. Gently pursue them. Because kids, when they know you really want to know their heart, you respect what they have to say, they will tell you almost anything.
Yeah, but not always on our timeline,
as you said. No, exactly. Exactly. You know, not on our timeline. And also, you need to be ready. I think that I had some of the best conversations with our kids when they were seniors in high school than any other time. That's because they would come home, you know, in the afternoon early or whatever, and I'd be doing something, and they'd come in and just sit down and be doing their homework and throw out a question to me, and it would lead to a lot of deeper discussion. But that's their timeline.
Yeah.
You know, I can't go to them and say, okay, we've got half hour here between soccer practice and ballet practice. Tell me how your day was. It doesn't work. Yeah. You know, it doesn't work.
Feminism is a word that conjures up extremes on both ignoring the role of women in the world today or something else. So you have a section here called Where to Find Healthy Feminism.
Yeah, you do. You say that word and either both sides, one side either gets very angry about it, like, go away, that's a horrible thing, and then the other side really amps up. But here's I think, what's happened since the second wave of feminism, where I was at an all-women's college in the 70s. We've morphed to the point where women are pitting themselves against men. And there's this animosity. You know, we're a very divided culture politically. We're also divided between the sexes. And women have been trained to believe they don't need men. We can do everything on our own. Being a single mom is lauded. It's a good thing. But we're doing a tremendous disservice to our daughters who need their dads and who want their dads.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I talk about is, look, if you approach feminism from this vantage point, which is the way we've done it, is that we are out there for blood. We're out there to beat men at whatever they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're out there to push them away and say, we don't need you and our kids don't need you. Thank you very much. Go away. Which is what a lot of women say.
Yeah.
It's devastating to our kids. So I wanted to pull back and say, hold on a minute. This isn't healthy feminism at all. Being healthy as a woman is understanding your strengths and your gifts and using them, but not putting down others in the meantime. Yes, there are glass ceilings, and yes, there are other things out there, but, you know, do whatever you can, whatever you're gifted to do extremely well, and just have at it. But do it in a way that doesn't put others, i.e. men, down, and it can be done. I've seen so many women do it.
Again, folks, if you've just tuned in, I'm talking with Dr. Med Meeker. She's written a book called Raising a Strong Daughter in a Toxic Culture. You talk about, in Chapter 8, root her faith in God. I've got four daughters. One of them doesn't seem to have the spiritual gene like the others.
Yeah. Don't we all?
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
Yeah. But here's what we do, and we're talking about rooting kids. You know, When your kids are adults, they're going to do what they're going to do. Research bears out that God is good for kids. Surprise, surprise. and that daughters who grew up with a faith, and I'm talking Judeo-Christian faith because that's what I know, they do well across the board. They have better relationships. They do better in school, less likely to be depressed and anxious. And so to really teach kids that there's something greater and better and bigger beyond what they can see and feel. Even three-year-olds know that. Three-year-olds are so easy to convince that there's a God who loves them, who is called Father, who's actually nicer than their own dad. You know, so when we teach them that as they grow up and we show them the love of God, you know, we're going to make a lot of mistakes, but that's sinking their roots deep. Now, many of those girls are going to grow up. They're going to hit 18 or 21 and go, you know what? Thanks, but I'm not so sure what I think.
Right.
That's okay. A lot of kids do that. And they'll kind of walk away. And what I say to those kids is, okay, but search for truth and read everything. Have every conversation you can to find truth because truth matters. And if they really diligently find truth, it will lead them back to God. Because he is Jesus. God is the ultimate truth. And so I'm not afraid for them, but I also know enough about kids. I've been doing this, seen a whole generation go through, that girls who have a strong faith and rooted in it do circle back eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, you gravitate towards what you know. You know, that's why daughters talk like their mothers, and that's why daughters look to husbands who are kind of like their dad. That impulse to gravitate back towards what you know and what you learned is very, very strong.
In Chapter 7, eating, body image, and helping our daughters strike the right balance, and the right balance is the key there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. You know, kids have to live with food, of course. And I think that moms here are a real instrumental role. You know, I routinely ask teenage girls, what are the two big things you struggle with? And the first one out of their mouth 90% of the time is being skinny. I need to be skinnier and be pretty. Dieting is out of control in girls, particularly in our country. Girls who can't undereat, overeat. And those who can't overeat, undereat.
Mm.
And so it's like the hypersexualization. We're hyper-focused on thinness. And I don't need to, you know, nobody needs to, I don't need to prove that to anybody. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
But what we need to do as moms is, first of all, communicate to our daughters that they need to be strong. They need to be strong physically, mentally, and spiritually. And that when you diet, you're trying to take strength away. You're basically saying, I want to evaporate. I want to go away. And we don't want to communicate that to our daughters. Secondly, the best way for a mother to teach her daughter to have a healthy body image is to be a good example, which means moms, don't talk about dieting in front of your daughters. How many times I hear mothers go, I got to lose that last 10 pounds. How do you lose weight? And our daughters are overhearing it. Mm-hmm. So no wonder 30% of girls in the third grade think they should be on a diet or are on a diet, because that's all we talk about. Do I look fat in these jeans? How does this shirt look? You know, we need to stop talking about that if we really don't want it to be a priority. So rather than say to your girlfriend if you have, you know, a mother, say to your girlfriend if you haven't seen a long time, rather than say, hi, so nice to see you, how good, you look so good, i.e. you look thin, right. That's what women really mean, say, hey, you know, how have you been over the past year? So don't make a conscious effort not to focus on what another woman looks like. Don't talk about it. And you will, your daughters will follow suit, and they'll start to talk to other people the way you're talking to other people. And how a person looks and how thin they are will not as easily come into the conversation. It's really important for moms to do.
Because girls are looking for friends at all ages, it seems, what can we do regarding good friends and then the bad ones we know that are out there?
Oh, sure. Well, as far as good friends, you know, I always, you know, tell parents, if you want your kids to grow up a certain way, find them a couple friends who want to go in the same direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hang around a lot of married people because I want to have a good marriage, and it works. So what you do is you help your daughter early on say, what do you think would be a, what would you like in a friend, kindergarten? What do you think the girls are that would be fun to hang around? Mm-hmm. And you start talking to them about other people, and you help steer your daughter towards girls that you think would be positive influences. And I know that everybody's about diversity and accepting people, and that's great. That's fine. We should love everybody. But if you want your daughters to grow strong in a certain direction, that's why there are teams. Try to find them team members that are going to keep them, you know, on the straight and narrow. So we can have a big influence on who our kids hang around. And I would say this, if you find that there are some kids in your kids' classes that they get older that are really bad eggs, mm-hmm. and they're creating a lot of problems in the class, and the principal and the teachers can't do anything or won't, they need to change schools. I mean, I really believe that, because I think that, now this is very rare, but I have seen situations where kids are actually being hit on the playground and nobody will do anything over and over. It's like, he needs a different environment, or she needs a different environment. So we can have a lot of influence over the friends that our kids choose. We just need to kind of gently direct them.
The chapter, Help Her Be a Strong Woman, Not a Victim. This whole victim thing is out there, but for some reasons, and it, again, becomes an extreme thing.
Yes. Well, absolutely. I mean, we're living in a day where sort of victimhood has morphed into don't hurt my feelings or, you know, you should go to jail.
Yeah.
Really, it's really out of control. And what that does, if you feel it is your right to not have people hurt your feelings, you're going to have to live in a different world,
right?
Because that's part of life. We've got to learn to be resilient. What I'm talking about being a victim is sort of saying, you know, life is going to have, I'm going to experience a lot of bad stuff in life, and people aren't going to be nice, and that's kind of the way life is. However, when those things happen and someone's mean to me, I am going to say, okay, that person is mean, but I'm going to set some boundaries with that person. Somebody comes to you and they start swearing and using foul language. Stop, excuse me. I really don't appreciate your foul language or whatever. And you walk away. We teach the same thing to our daughters. Mm-hmm. If a guy is talking to you in a rude way or demeaning way, you put your hand up. Nope, I'm not going to allow you to talk that way, and you walk away. But what we're teaching our daughters to do is to say, he doesn't have the right to do that to you, so go focus on him and go after him, rather than say, this is what I can do. I can protect myself. I know I'm strong. He's not going to be part of my world. So to help them turn to their strengths and not turn to weakness, which is, how dare you do something horrible to me? Because that's just going to happen.
You mentioned in one section here, help her to take reasonable risks and fail. That carries on into adulthood, women, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Winston Churchill, you know, never, ever, ever, ever give up.
Yeah.
Which is a mantra most of us have to live by. We just have to pick ourselves up and up and up. And unfortunately, we don't often let our kids fail because conscientious parents want their kids to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. So we try to keep them going in a direction where they're not going to fall down. But it's really one of the best lessons we can teach our kids, to be on the soccer team when they're not the best soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
And then learn that's okay. Or to, you know, if they're going to take a high-level math class and not get an A, that's okay. It's being in there and gutting it out and being gritty. It is very, very important for kids. And so, but I think that even, and this is the thing that dads are really good for girls in, because dads will take girls out and encourage them to take more risks than mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know you're climbing this tree, daughter. You're 10 feet up. I know you can go 20. And the mom's screaming at the bottom of the tree, how dare you let her get up in the tree in the first place? You know, and so we need to allow our kids to sort of reach beyond what they think they can do and fall down. Obviously, they don't take risks that's going to harm their, you know, their health.
Right.
But you know, this is really important, because this is what teaches kids resilience and perseverance.
I was thinking about that. I have a 20-year-old. She has had an offer and took it to become a model for automobile shows, things like that. No, you know, and I said, maybe this is something you can do. And she did and is successful. I started to give her lectures as to the issues and the potential problems, but she already knew that, and she already had heard it, and I was so impressed at what she knew.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
You know, you parented her well. At 20, she's a woman. She's going to do what she's going to do. And what you do is you just always have her back and say, you know what, honey, that's not a job I would have chosen, but maybe this is your path. Maybe this is your story. Maybe this is what you're supposed to be doing for some reason. And, yeah, and you want to embrace her as her. And if she's not supposed to be doing that, I believe God will turn her around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, when I pray, I say, okay, Lord, I don't know if I should be moving in this direction,
right,
but this is where I think I should go. So if I'm not going the right way, will you just turn me around? And
yes.
So he does, a lot of times.
Very good. Again, the book is Raising a Strong Daughter in a Toxic Culture by Dr. Meg Maker. Dr. Maker, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Oh, I encourage people to go to the local bookstore, but I have a website, chock full of information.
Okay.
It's meekerparenting.com, meekerparenting.com.
Thank you so much for being with us on LifeQuest.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.